Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, Tuesday, October 6, 2009, I am delighted to welcome Brian Solis, co-author of Putting the Public Back in Public Relations, who may be better known for coining the term PR 2.0. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on, and we talked about the different pronunciations of your last name. So if you're tuning in to listen to Brian Solis, this is Brian Solis as well as Brian Solis. But I think he'll spare us from the long discussion of how to pronounce last names. And we want to definitely dedicate today's discussion to the book, Great Tome, for anyone who's had any experience working in PR. And I wanted to ask you first, since the book's been out a bit, what have you been asked the most already?
Oh, wow. I don't know that there's been a common theme to what I've been asked. And that's, I think, in of itself, what was the most fascinating thing to me is that I originally wrote this with Deirdre to reach the communications industry, to sort of help them transcend to, or basically traverse to the new media landscape, which was going to be inevitable for anyone anyway. But I was really surprised to see that the book wound up getting initial traction within just business marketing and also customer service and web marketing and interactive before it took off in public relations. In fact, PR in the industry of public relations itself is just now starting to embrace the book and start talking about it. So I guess I was most surprised, not by the common themes of questions, but by the uptick in adoption.
Interesting. You know, one thing I wanted to bring up early, well, before we get to that, just, you know, you said you'd written the book for communications professionals, and I think there's this great one line in italics, "We're writing this book for you," line in the book, where you're talking about, you know, it's not too late, there's still time. One thing I wanted to ask you about is, in terms of timing, does it feel, because the social web and there's been several Web 2.0 expos and some of these tools have been available, that, you know, that there is a sense in the industry that partially what this book helps is the timing, that maybe some feel like it's too late because it's already impacting their business model?
You know, it's really interesting because I just finished my next book. Well, I finished writing, and now I got to go into the editing of the next book. But the thing is that I thought we were much further along that Rogers bell curve of innovation adoption than we really are. And mm-hmm. When I was originally going through trying to figure out how to start the book, you know, in terms of what level of expertise people were going to be at reading it, I realized that there was much more work we had to do in terms of establishing that need as well. Because there is this echo chamber of folks within social media or Web 2.0 that are realizing the opportunity here, but there are still so many questions surrounding, like, the most obvious question, which is, what do we do next? Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is great. I get the need, but, you know, what do we do? And so most people are defaulting to things like, okay, well, let's set up a Twitter account. Okay, let's set up a Facebook fan page. Let's get a blog. And we're doing all these tactical things without really answering a lot of the strategic questions first, because we're not quite sure what we need to ask. We're not quite sure how to even answer them. So to be honest, as far as we've come, and as far as we think we've come, there's much more work to be done in order to do this the right way, and also to do this in a way that actually augments the existing things that work today instead of trying to replace them with new, brand-new infrastructures. Because at the end of the day, Web 2, social media, whatever you want to call it, these are just new channels that mm-hmm. offer new opportunities. But, you know, if I were to tell you, you know, let's just pretend like we're in the fax era and email was coming into our world. You know, it would be not unlike that era. You know, who owns email? And basically, well, you know, IT owns email, and that's just from setting it up. But, you know, in the end, you guys are each responsible for using it in a way that's going to maximize your work processes and the people that you're trying to reach.
I think that dovetails nicely into another question I wanted to get to today, which is that Loïc Lemire, who you probably know from Seismic, has been a guest on the program and did an event, was part of an event at the San Francisco American Marketing Association, and has said this for a long time, and you've probably heard him say it directly to you, that there's no longer a need for PR. His point of view is really that executives need to use the channels available that you've described that are now available to talk directly to the people, to their users, to potential users. What do you make of those kind of statements?
You can't disagree with them in the sense that, the message that he's championing is in its most basic sense correct. I mean, he's saying, we're trying to humanize the company. We're trying to put a face to the company. We're trying to put a voice to the company. You're the executive of the company, and therefore you're, the leader, and people want to connect with you, and therefore you should. I mean, if you strip out, I guess, the practical realities of making that happen, it's the right story. It's the right message. But if you take the word executive out of the process and you assume that this company isn't necessarily just a startup, you realize that it's the brand that could probably benefit from what he's saying. And the only place where I would disagree is that, you can't get by without good public relations. You can get by without a publicist. You can get by without, with the tactics or the mechanics of just the communications function as it is, as it's practiced horribly, especially as he's experienced and a lot of people have experienced.
Yeah.
But if you got, it's the difference between publicity and presence, right? And so if you had, and that's why the book is called Putting the Public Back in Public Relations, not the public back in publicity or public back in PR. It's like public relations is a much more important role within the organization. And it's something that we forget, but the typical processes of public relations from PR is, write a press release, blast it out, pitch people, send emails. It's all acts of publicity and not presence, right? And so when Loïc says that, I understand what he's saying. I just think there's better ways of, saying it. No, you can't do it by yourself because you actually have a company to run if you're taking him literally. It's good to be the champion. It's good to be the face and the voice of the company. But at the end of the day, you're only as strong as the organization that can stand on its own two feet anyway, right? So you can't be everywhere. You can't be saying and doing everything you need to say. The company should also be empowered to do that. And in the process of doing, quote unquote, that, you're actually practicing public relations. So in the end, you do need it. You just need some help doing it the right way because it's not something that's inherent. If it was all based on common sense, then common sense, I think, would be a lot more common than uncommon.
I agree with that, actually. And, the other piece is, of course, there's always a role for training and learning in this new world and kind of hand-holding. So, a part of me wonders, especially as you coined a new phrase, PR 2.0, and that was, God, I can't even remember when that was. You can remind us. But do you think social media will make the definition of PR change?
Well, I guess I can answer that with a question.
Okay.
Does it need to change? Or did it change on its own and needs to just go back to what it was? I mean, these are, the book explores the need to realize that in the end this is about public relations, not necessarily just marketing or communications or publicity. There's an argument that can be said that a lot of people, don't even understand the definition of the industry that they're working in, that they're representing.
Right.
The definition, I think, is part of the problem. Just like, when social media was coming up and we were trying to define it, I mean, we realized, of course, that you could work as hard as you want, and the Wikipedia page was a reflection of that, that the industry is going to take it and define it as at will, and to some extent, it's defined through practice and not through words. And so what we tried to do is we tried to say, public relations should stand for this. Public relations should be the epitome of this. And in many cases, what the book is arguing is that in the new media landscape, where public relations, meaning that we are engaging, we are conversing, we are trying to influence, we are trying to listen to, to the public, to the people defining the publics, the audiences, not just an audience, the communities, not just a market, that someone needs to steer that ship. And technically, public relations is supposed to understand how to humanize the company, how to make that company story interesting, and how to then orchestrate the telling of that story using other channels. That's basically what public relations can be about. It also has to be able to bring feedback back in because, relations implies two-way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you talk to any public relations professional or communications professional or publicist or, PR or pro or whatever, they're called, you're going to get different answers to what it is that it's supposed to stand for. And I bet you'll get different answers for what they say and what they do.
That's great to point out. I mean, I think, one of the number one questions I've asked on LinkedIn is, PR is to marketing as blank is to blank, and let people fill in the blanks. And I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people reply to that, and all had very loaded opinions of both PR and of marketing. And it was a really interesting insight because of that.
Well, the PR industry in of itself, and I think the book does a very good job trying to state this. I mean, look, it's not a research book. It's a book designed to help people, who might be realizing the state of which they're in. And
mm-hmm.
both Deirdre and I realized that, when you come into a room and you say you're a PR person, there's a certain reaction you get. And if you're talking to a business executive, if you are talking to a salesperson, if you're talking to a customer, there just seems to be this sentiment, not documented, I don't have statistics for it, but there's just a sentiment, almost like saying used car salesman or lawyer, that PR is more spin than it is storytelling, that it is more selling than it is telling. And definitely, it's more pitching than it is conversing. And it's just the general reality of my world and definitely Deirdre's world, and that's what we wrote about. We wrote about ways to fix that. And so if you were to talk to Loic Lemure about what his impression of PR is, I'm pretty sure he's going to tell you, I've never met a PR person that I like. Or actually, let me do Loic a little bit better. I've never talked to a PR person that I like.
You did that pretty well.
I run a PR company, right? And I have to hear a lot of things a lot of times. And the general thing that I've observed, and it's just going to sound kind of simplistic, but it's the truth. I've never been hired by somebody who was absolutely ecstatic with their former PR representation.
Mhm. I've seen that before. It happens again and again, and, the stories go on. One of the reasons I wanted to ask you about the definition is I think that Chapter 2 is really interesting in the way that you title it PR 2.0 versus public relations, because it really does that deep dive into kind of the possibilities of what PR can be versus the sort of realities of both what people say they do, what they actually do, and what the majority of time spent is doing, versus, all the kinds of things that can open up. So I think, in terms of, bringing this back to the book, there's actually a chapter dedicated that I think really speaks to that.
And yeah, it's a good question. Not what what I should probably inject here is something very important, because if you don't ask it, somebody else is going to ask it. PR 2.0 is something that I started talking about a long time ago. And it was just that. It was the realization that there was a dichotomy between what public relations probably was supposed to be and what it is and what it could be. And what the social web, or you know, the interactive web, or whatever you want to call it, what it was forcing was this connection between real people, right? And so public relations, at least the public relations world that I had been in since 1991, was all about being behind a cloak or being behind a curtain, coming up with messages and blasting them over the fence and blasting them to as many people as we can, because we thought that in that process we could get stories retold. And by pitching people or making friends with people or going to events and, you know, connecting with the right people, that we could get these stories told. And in many cases, that still works. It's not that it was a replacement, but the ideas and principles and methodology behind PR 2.0 were so different, and even down to the systematic workflow of that business, meaning, wow, if you start engaging with people and you start recognizing influencers at the peer-to-peer level, and you're starting to embrace one-on-one relationships more than just mass marketing or mass broadcasting, it suddenly takes more time to do your job. Well, does the infrastructure work if you're billing at $200-$300 an hour to spend 8 hours a day on Twitter? No, you know, it's like what we were saying is that there's just a whole different philosophy now and a whole different business model that has to support the right kind of public relations. So, you know, we answer this question is, you know, is there a PR 3.0? Well, no, there never was supposed to be a 2.1, a 2.5, a 3.0, or a 4.0. The idea was that it was just so different. And it was actually in reference to software, you know, like when you got to 2.0, it was a really big step because you learned a lot through the iteration. And that's why we say that PR 2.0 really is just introducing you to the ideas, the principles, the purpose, so that you can bring it all back into just public relations, not PR, not publicity, not media relations, but public relations. So the joke is that I actually own PR30.com. And if you go there, there's a – I think it's up. I haven't, you know, formally announced this, but I wrote this long letter as to why it'll never be PR 3.0. It'll just be public relations. And that's because my inbox is always full of marketers trying to sell me on the tools that are going to help me get from PR 2.0 to PR 3.0. And if the industry is thinking that way, well, you know, we still have a bigger problem. We know we still have a lot more work to do to get people to realize it's not a number. It's not an iteration. It's a set of philosophies and feelings and emotions and just fundamental business acknowledgments that there's work to do to bring back the public and public relations.
True. I'm wondering, one of the things that, you know, is a question is how this book or how you intended this book, and by the way, the letter is available on PR30.com, and we'll link to it from my site. But the whole idea of, you know, the in-house corp com versus agency or even down to the contractor level, when you put the book together, were you thinking of these different layers and types of PR, or is it really directed at, you know, folks like you who actually own an agency and are doing that work every day?
It's aimed at everybody. It had to be, and especially when you're writing the book, you know, you can't single out any one type of individual. What we tried to write a book that if you're in the agency, you can give to the people you report to within the agency. You can give it to your clients and the people that you have to report to at the client level. If you're within the organization in your own PR department, you know, you send that book up, you send that book down. It was intended to be instructional, to reveal the world of public relations to, you know, a CXO who has to make decisions. It was written for people who are now having to socialize their customer service departments. You know, the Frank Eliassons of the world have read this book. You know, that it is intended to really reach anybody involved in public relations, which is why when the book was first released, the first groups of people who really picked up on the books were these new service organizations and new digital marketers. And public relations still, as an industry, has yet to really embrace this book in mass. And it will, but that's kind of giving you an idea of how people are viewing the role of public relations within the organization, and which is why we had to write to a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm. One question I have is about public relations as an industry and its agility. And, you know, really the history of PR. Was there any sense looking, you know, through the writing of the book and looking at the history of PR and its genesis that there does at least seem to be this sense, and I could be wrong, that most, you know, pretty, you know, typical PR companies aren't really that agile. So if you say, you know, let's say you're a small or medium-sized business, an engagement with either a small firm, a niche firm, or an individual person may be a lot more attractive, which basically leaves these agencies as kind of behemoths that, again, you know, are stuck in this sort of rut of being considered something like a used car salesman or even just too clunky to deal with. Do you see that? I mean, is being nimble, you know, an inherent problem of the industry at large?
It's one of the problems. There are so many problems with, you know, depending on who you talk to about the problems with public relations, it will, you know, vary your answers as to what the real problem is with public relations, right? Is it not nimble enough? Is it too nimble? Is it not structured? Is it not as effective? You know, and a lot of this has to do with just the sort of, I don't want to say inability, but just the lack of understanding of how the PR business works, right? I mean, I could probably tell you more often than not, if you sat there and polled a whole bunch of people, especially decision makers who hire and fire public relations agencies or public relations staff, they will tell you that probably their number one concern or issue with public relations is that they don't get articles everywhere they want when they want, right?
Mm-hmm,
and it's,
mm-hmm.
it's that belief that that's just how it's supposed to work. You know, you are supposed to have a relationship with the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and you're supposed to just say, hey, this is our news release,
mm-hmm.
you know, and my only next question is to just ask you when you can run it, and that's a done deal. But, you know, you and I both know that things don't work that way. So there's just, you know, bringing in public relations into this new genre, right? I mean, that mentality is a lot, you know, it's one of the reasons why the FTC had to get involved in the process, right? Because companies realize, oh, if we just send people products or money, they'll write about us.
And that's just what I was going to ask you about, actually. So for folks that are listening that don't know, the FTC has updated its guidelines concerning the use of endorsements and testimonials in advertising. It's the first time they've done that since 1980. And among the changes is a requirement that bloggers who make an endorsement must disclose the material connections they share with the seller of the product or service. And fines for violating this new rule can run up to $11,000 per post. And I wanted to get your reaction to that because obviously it runs contrary to, I mean, obviously everything that you know, I do trying to speak to people that are in high places and, you know, have a dialogue. But, you know, certainly what you're doing, you know, in as much you're doing the same for the public relations industry in your book, right?
Well, we're trying to say, like, that's just one way to do things. But at the end of the day, that it's again, it comes down to publicity versus presence. You know, presence implies much more than just sending people press releases or products to get them to write about you. It implies that you are also active in the role of defining your visibility, right? And so one of the things the book really promotes is that you should be looking at this as becoming influential in your own right, right? The same channels and processes and platforms that bloggers and tastemakers are using to become, you know, authorities or influential or internet famous, what have you, are the same things that we can use to become prominent within our own ecosystem. And we need to look at that. We need to, you know, rely on our intermediaries. We need to also rely on our advocates, and we also should be part of the process. We should be contributing to the process. And it's just it's almost like a Control-Alt-Delete that we need to bring to this industry in order for it to be effective. I wrote, right after I wrote the book, or with Deirdre, I came out with this post called The State of the PR Industry. And it was really, you know, it could have really been the last chapter of this book, or it could have been the first chapter of the next book. And that is, here's everything, here's the reality, here's the state of PR. I mean, it's in a crisis by a lot of decision makers who put it there, and by a lot of practitioners who contributed to it being there. But here's the reality, regardless of how we got to where it is, here's what we need to do to get it moving forward. And in that post, I talk about how to create new financial models for whether that PR department is in a corporate environment, whether it's in an agency environment, whether it's in a consultancy, how to bill for things, what you should be billing for, what new roles are looking like moving forward. Because once people figure out what they need and why they need it in the new media space, right, it changes everything. And what they start looking for is not what public relations is as a stereotype or general view today. They are looking for people who can help them not just set up Twitter accounts and not just set up blogs and implement blogger relations programs. They're looking literally to move the needle. Like, they are actively trying to really answer this ROI question. And so It takes a lot more than just the tactics, right? Like writing a press release and sending a press release could be just a tactic. What else can we be doing, and how are we measuring its extent, right, and effectiveness? So I have to, when I'm talking to new prospects, for example, I am pitching against, more often than not, digital agencies, right? People who do things like create applications and videos and things of people that I used to hire in the past when we were doing interesting multimedia things. And now I'm competing against them because they believe it's easier for them to include new capabilities like blogger relations by hiring someone who's a blogger or someone who is active, you know, in the Twitterverse, than it is to get someone in public relations to get up to speed on that front, right? They believe it's easier for someone else to build relationships with the New York Times and Wall Street Journal because they're going to come at this as, say, an enthusiast of whatever it is that they're representing, not as a communication spin artist or spin doctor. So there's just this battle of capabilities that are still, you know, in the end, only as good as their qualifications, but people are making decisions based on these needs they think they have before they can even answer. This kind of comes back to the beginning of the conversation. Before they can even answer exactly why and to what extent they need to be on the social web.
So we only have a few more minutes, and before we let you go, I want to ask you a question about, so, you know, you I think your role with Bubblicious is that you owned it or created it?
Oh, yeah, that is a blog that I run that documents what we call, or what I called back in the day, the social economy. So I started it to sort of document the rise of Web 2, and then the people behind it who were sort of creating a social infrastructure for the web.
And I think, to a certain extent, you know, one of the things that you've done really well is by having these web presences, I think people that I know, at least, think of you as having sort of digital, you know, capabilities. So I think that you're just, you know, by practicing what you preach and having, you know, your own presence be strong and being in multiple places, doing different kinds of documentation, less for money and more for, you know, hopefully, you know, public awareness, it does help your own sort of sense of thought leadership and that kind of thing in terms of presence. So you kind of need to practice what you preach, too. Isn't that part of the message?
Absolutely. I mean, part of the message is you don't have to just practice what you preach, right? Because, you know, a lot of people are on Twitter and a lot of people are, you know, commenting on blogs. A lot of people are, you know, playing around in social media sandbox. But you have to be able to learn from what it is that you're practicing in order to effectively embody what it is that you're trying to represent, right? It's like saying, going back to that email example, right? I mean, you have to, it's what goes into it that counts more than the tool or the technology itself. And that's what a lot of people have yet to figure out, that there's more sociology than technology here. And it's much more important. You know, I think people are so excited. Have you ever flown Virgin America?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know that video that we all have to endure at the beginning of the flight, that you know, the safety video?
Yeah.
The part where the bullfighter puts on his seatbelt and he's so excited that he knew how to do it that he's tapping the bull like, hey, look at me. I got to do the seatbelt. And the bull's thinking, hey, man, you know, anyone can fasten a seatbelt. It's the same thing with Twitter and all of these new social tools, is that we are all so excited that we can fasten the seatbelt that we're out there telling the world that we're now experts, when the reality is that's just something you should be able to do anyway. It's everything behind it that counts. It's what you do with it, what you learn from it, what you grow, how you grow, what you inspire others, why people follow you, what the reasons you give them to follow you and connect with you. These are the things at deeper levels that have to extend, not just by us and our personal brands, but by the brands we're representing. Those answers have yet to be even asked before they can be answered.
And on that note of asking and answering, we are out of time. I had a couple more questions for you. So I would love it if you would do, you know, 10 questions for Brian Solis so we can post it on my blog. And you'd be welcome to post it on your blog, obviously, if we could do that. Because I have, you know, is PR, can PR be an exit strategy? You know, Zappos, somebody high there was one of the people that endorsed your book. Was it fun for you to write the book? I can think of, you know, on and on of questions that maybe you've answered. So if you take me up on that, let me know by email and we'll take that offline. But thank you so much for joining us, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And I hope to bump into you at the next Lunch for Good or something like that so we can have a chat.
Me too. And I hope everybody out there gets a chance to read it. Putting the Public Back in Public Relations. It's everywhere, hopefully in the bookstore near you or online. I would love to know what you think. So let me know.
Yes, and please, you know, comment on Brian's blog. He's easy to find, briansolis.com, which is also linked from my website. So, you know, you should feel free to comment on our sites. Thanks, Brian. I'll let you go so you can get on with your day. And I want to thank the audience for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. We hope you enjoyed the program. If so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to tune in on Friday when my featured guest is Marshall Sponder, founder of WebmetricsGuru.com. That's 1 week from today at 12 noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free information at JenniferLindsay.com. Thanks so much.